Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sam Legasek.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd.
This is the
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
Hi everyone, it's me, Dreadful Dan G, and welcome to Oddcast with also my friend Sam.
Hello, it's me.
What you been up to, Sam?
I've been up to a fair bit, actually. I've been watching a lot of stuff. I might just go through it
please
quickly.
Do.
Have you watched a series called Succession?
No. I've heard of it. Maybe you mentioned it.
Maybe. It's on Sky over here, but it's HBO in America. And it's basically like kind of a thing on the Murdochs, and it's by this guy Jesse Armstrong. He did a bit of Peep Show.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it is really good. And yeah, I just kind of finished it all within a few days. And that's one of the kind of best things I've seen on TV, because it's basically a whole cast of horrible people. It really is like this big media conglomerate that's led by Brian Cox, like Rupert Murdoch style. And it's it with his children. Who are all like vying for power, and they're just like nasty pieces of work, and they're just like really super fucking rich. And it's quite interesting. So I recommend seeing that if you can.
So is it a satire? Is it funny?
It's a drama, but it has loads of funny bits. So weirdly, because it's Jesse Armstrong, it's like an element of Britishness to it. So it's kind of like the comedy is can range from like quite silly to quite dark in like a matter of moments.
That's
pretty cool. Yeah. I saw Mulan, the new Mulan as well, which I think I might have said, I can't remember, but that was okay. Disney Plus subscribers can get it for an extra $30. Not worth that, I would say.
What is it, like a live action version?
Yeah, exactly that. So yeah, I wouldn't really recommend that. I saw a shitty horror movie called Crawl, which is about some alligators at the bottom of someone's house during like a hurricane flood and all this.
That sounds great.
Exactly what it says on the tin. Yeah, it was 90 minutes of ridiculousness that I actually didn't really have a problem with.
Is that a recent thing?
It didn't change my life. Yeah, I think it came out last year or the year before. I saw The Invisible Man with, what's her name? Elizabeth Moss. And that was really good. It's basically he's a like a domestic abuser.
Yeah.
And he's like killed himself or something. But then she's like, he's not killed himself. He's here. He's got an invisible suit. And everyone's like, yeah, right, whatever. And all that's pretty cool.
Was that another recent kind of remake?
Yeah, that was pretty recent. I think that was last year, year before. Hmm. I saw a shitty Netflix film called I See You, which has, do you remember Helen Hunt? She won an Oscar.
Yeah.
Got to give. So she's in it and she looks like a fucking orc. She looks awful. She's had so much surgery. She's old, right? She's like 60 or something.
Yeah.
And she's had so much surgery. And you can see me, so people at home won't be able to see this, but her skin is like, she's so thin, it's like a skull. But it's like, you know when you see people and it's like, but she's got like no lips. Her lips are like disappeared.
Wow.
All her skin is stretched right back. And it's like this scary, horrible face. I'm not joking, honestly. Watch a trailer. I See You. Watch the trailer and tell me that that's not scary. She is the scariest thing about that film.
Jesus.
By far.
Worth watching just for the freak show.
Just for her. But that's only the first half. She's in it. And that's part of the problem with the film. I won't get into it. But not worth seeing. It's only worth seeing to watch Helen Hunt for 5 minutes. Then you're fine. And then I saw a shitty, I think it's Korean zombie movie called Hashtag Alive. It's basically about a guy who's a streamer, funny enough, who's there's like basically a zombie apocalypse going on. And he just is trying to survive. He's just locked in his apartment by himself, and then it's him just trying to survive and escape, and it is so boring. I was like, okay, I can get into like this kind of a good like zombie apocalyptic thing. You know, there's been a few, but I was like, a Korean one, that'll be like, maybe it's like Train to Busan, which I really liked. And no, it's nothing like that. It was there was nothing new about it either. It's pretty dreadful. And a couple other things. I'll make it quick. I watched a couple of episodes of The Boys on Prime, which is pretty good.
What's that?
Better than I thought it would be. It's basically like Watchmen in the sense of it's like if superheroes were real, but okay, like they're all dickheads. And it's like kind of adding some like reality to it. So like if someone can move at the speed of light or whatever, they could just like run through and just completely disintegrate someone and all this stuff. But they're all just like dicks and pervs and all this stuff.
Any good?
Yeah, and I really liked it. But I've only just started it. It's on the second season now, but I've not got that far. And then something which has been a real guilty pleasure, Dan, has been this Netflix show called Selling Sunset.
Okay.
Which is like The Hills. It's basically these bunch of like really rich Barbie doll women in LA trying to sell rich people homes that are like millions and millions of dollars.
Why are you watching the drama
they have with each other. Because it's like some shit TV I can have in the background and not really pay attention to and not feel guilty about. I'm not paying attention to it.
In terms of sheer man hours, is that what you've spent the most time watching
this week? Probably, yeah. Just it's so background. But that's what I've been watching and doing.
Lovely. I've been out in nature, so I haven't been watching nearly as much as you.
Naturist. What nature?
Naturalist.
That's the one, yeah.
The preferred form of enjoying nature. What have I been doing? I watched a film called DOA. It's a bit of an old classic.
That's Korean, isn't it?
No, it's from this American film from 1949.
Oh, right, yeah, that's what I'm thinking of it.
It's a great conceit. It kind of opens with this guy saying, he turns up at police stations, like, I need to speak to the sergeant. He's like, I want to report a murder happened in San Francisco last night. He's like, who was it? Me. So the idea is that this guy's been poisoned and he's only got like 2 days to live. And he spends the whole film trying to unravel who has poisoned him and why. And it's a pretty good little thriller. Pretty good.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm surprised. I was watching it thinking like this would be fantastic material for a remake. And it's got all these really wild, crazy, colourful characters in it. It's really good fun.
Mm. I haven't seen a good, decent old black and white movie for ages, if you know what I mean. I love that when you find like a classic.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I don't really know this one, but I'll give it a try. And you're like, that was really good.
Something just like warm and satisfying about it. It did get quite convoluted at one point, and I thought, I'm not sure quite following what's happened here. There's a big complex plot around a deal, a drug deal. And in terms of listening, I've been listening to that chap that I mentioned before, Harry Cloud. And I actually did a video on my YouTube channel, Dreadful Discs, talking about a couple of his albums. Weird, out there, experimental noise rock, really, for people who like that kind of thing. You've got an open mind, fancy hearing that kind of thing. And if that is your thing, experimental noise rock, then this episode is hopefully also going to be your thing. We're talking about... Yeah,
what are we talking about?
We're talking about one of my favourite bands of all time, Scratch Acid. 1980s Texan post-punk noise rock band.
Cool. Should we take a quick listen to it?
Well, yeah, why not? So, Scratch Acid. Should I do a little intro, some facts about the band?
I know you already know this already, but I know next to nothing about this band. Like, I know the name, I know the general sound they do. I don't even think I've actually listened or heard any of their music before I did it for this podcast, I'm pretty sure.
Really? Nothing?
I don't think so. Like, if I have, I don't remember it, so... That's it. I know next to nothing.
Cool. Well, that's good. I'll give you some background and then it's going to be really interesting to get your thoughts. I'm really excited because I just recently got hold of these records. So this band, they only did really three records and they've all been compiled onto one CD. So I got that CD about 20 years ago. But getting the original records has been quite high on my list of priorities as a record collector for quite some time. And they always go like really expensive. But I managed to get the first and third records off a guy on eBay. And they normally go for like 50, 60 quid each. And he's just some old, well, he said, oh, I'm an old dude. And I just want them to go to someone who's going to appreciate them. Because he'd bought them from new. And he sold them to me for like 5 quid. So
cool.
Last week I've had those and I've been playing them, the original vinyl copies, which really, really put me in the mood. Scratch Acid, they were formed in the summer of 1982 in Austin, Texas. At that time, there was quite a cool music scene. Like some of the big bands of the time were The Dicks. And a band called Big Boys. Have you heard of them?
No,
I think
so.
Again, they're of a time. Big Boys. Big Boys are pretty good, and they had a longer career. I got hold of some of their stuff. It's pretty good. Just kind of like a bit more kind of like standard punk.
Okay.
But they were very influential at the time. So both those bands, I think, influenced Scratch Acid. They were originally formed, there were five members. Steve Anderson, who was the singer. David Yao was the bassist. Brett Bradford and David Sims were guitarists. And Ray Washam was the drummer. And in December 1982, they recorded a demo. And it's got Steve Anderson singing. But at some point between then and 1984, there's not that much information out there online, by the way. So filling in some gaps. But at some point, Steve Anderson gets the heave-ho, the singer, and David Yao moves from bass and becomes the vocalist. David Sims, one of the guitarists, becomes the bassist. I find that really interesting because, to me, David Yao is one of the, as a vocalist, is like so important. And also David Sims as the bassist is so important, but especially because both of those Davids went on to then be the singer and the bassist in the Jesus Lizard. So the fact that they started off here doing completely different things.
Yeah, it's weird. It's cool though when it's, you know, bands mix. I always think about, like, I think we spoke about it when we did our horrors episode, and I can't remember, one of the other members picked up the bass, and then suddenly he was the bassist. He did the bass, so like they started jamming out like a couple of songs that made it onto the record.
And
he just became the bassist after that, and he just hadn't played it before.
It happens, right? When you've got a bunch of people together and they're just starting out in bands and trying out what they're good at. But it's cool that there is a record of it, because there's this demo that exists, so you can hear what they sounded like with this other guy singing.
Okay.
Not good.
Right. Would that have been one of the ones I'd listened to already?
No.
This?
No. Possibly, actually. One of the songs, we'll come to it later. Yeah, one of them appears. Another big influence, I think, on the band then, and you know, you hear it more with David Yao singing, is this Birthday Party influence.
Right.
You're a fan of, you know, Birthday Party?
I don't know Birthday Party.
It's Nick Cave's band before Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know that.
And yeah, like, you can hear the influence of his kind of like vocal style, which was all, you know, bloody and like screaming and yelping and like sounding quite pained. But I think David Yao brings his own sort of like brand of demented anguish to everything.
Yeah, I bet.
So yeah, then the band basically over this period, so they formed 82, but really between, I think 83 was when they first started playing. And so they existed 83 to 87. And then they were done. But in that time, they, like I said, they released, two EPs and one full-length album. And I think let's just go through those records, you know, have a chat about the music and hear what you thought about them.
Yeah, okay, cool. Let's do it.
So the first one. Was the self-titled Scratch Acid from 1984. And let's have a little bit of Cannibal. Okay, that was Cannibal. Don't break my arm, Sam.
Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, don't break my heart by not liking this EP, Sam.
Cannibal!
What did you think?
Okay, well, firstly, this was, as I was saying, my introduction, basically, to this band was this first song. And the first thing I thought is, I was like, this has Dan written all over it in many ways. Like, one, I was like, this is the kind of stuff that is his bread and butter, for one thing.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, it's very, as probably people would have listened to, it's very strange. It's also hectic, a bit noisy. As you said, like, the vocals are completely off kilter and manic. Like, the guitars are very like scratchy and high in the EQ. And To be honest, I know we'll probably go into this a bit more later on down the line, but it reminded me a lot of an early Nirvana Incesticide kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I can hear a lot of that in there. I don't know, and I'm sure you'll tell me if Kurt thought Scratch Acid were any kind of influence or anything like that. Do you know at all?
Well, there's that famous picture of him, I think it's about 1988, sitting out in a field and he's got a Scratch Acid t-shirt on.
Oh, really?
And this EP, this first one, is on his much lauded list of the 50 best albums.
Right.
You know, I think people put a little bit too much stock in that list, don't they? Because at the end of the day, it's just one thing that he scribbled down once in his notebook and your tastes change all the time. But, you know, it was on there. He liked the band and he obviously had those records. I can hear a little bit of it, definitely, in Incesticide. That really earliest stuff. Songs like Mexican Seafood, Beeswax, all the most fucked up stuff, basically.
Yeah, towards the end of the album, I always think of that stuff as being... definitely I can see a lot there. To be honest, I didn't mind it, put it that way. And I quite liked the use of like the reverse drum sound and the drumming. I think what I liked about it was that it felt different for one thing. Also, it sounded like it was parts that shouldn't come together, kind of being meshed together, which is fine. And I enjoyed like that kind of variety. I liked the drumming. I think by the time I got to the end of this album, basically this album started off like, oh, this is great. By the time I got to the end of this, before listening to all of this stuff, I was like, okay, it kind of got a bit too much for me basically at the end. So this was like quite a strong start. I was kind of like, it didn't feel as fresh as I thought it might do going through listening to it. There's some tracks which I know we'll go into, which kind of I thought were better, basically, put it this way. But I like it. I think it kind of having the vocals doing that kind of thing makes it sound a bit messier than it actually is as a constructed song, if that makes sense, as a composed piece.
Totally. And, you know, that's what people say about the Jesus Lizard.
Mm.
You know, is that the three guys that are playing were so tight and, like, machine-like and workman-like. And then you've just got this, like, feral kind of energy of David Yao singing all over the place. You know, his cadence and the singing doesn't match the rhythms of the music or, you know, necessarily. And that's definitely the case here with Scratch Acid as well. He kind of brings that chaos and actually, you know, the three guys that are playing are in pretty tight unison. It's pretty machine-like kind of, you know, like that song Cannibal, you know, that was obviously the first song I heard by them as well. And I was coming to this band as a fan of the Jesus Lizard.
Mm.
And I was just like... blown away by that, like that lurch of the bass in total sync with that, with the drums.
Mm.
Just like the horror of David Yao screaming. And,
yeah.
But it sounds to me, it's so much more the Jesus Lizard, because that's built around the guitar of Dwayne Dennison, who's got this kind of classical jazzy style.
Right.
They've got a quite different sound. Scratch Acid sounds more depraved in some way. And it kind of sounds a bit more, and again, some of this is the production, it sounds kind of like dank and I think it's like it all sounds like it's happening in a mildewy kind of basement. There's something horrible and unpleasant about it all.
Yeah, it feels like dirty. but not just like dirty as in like grubby. Yeah, there's like a wetness to it. Which is weird when you think about it, but I know exactly what you mean.
So let's come back to just talking about this first release. So that's the first. So Sam listened to The Greatest Gift, which is the compilation from 1991 of all their released catalogue. But just coming back to the first eight songs on that, This was recorded, by the way, July 1984 in Austin, Texas, by a guy called Kerry Crafton. I don't know who he is, but I only mention it because they go back to working with him on the last release, and the album in the middle. They tried something else, worked with a different producer. So it's kind of interesting, I think, to compare the first EP and the final EP in that regard. But yeah, I mean, like overall, like this is my favorite of their records. I think it's got the best songs and it's got the most diversity across those eight tracks. And like when I was just like reviewing this again, listening, and I was surprised like how much kind of like there's some surf guitar in there, like some Cramps psychobilly influence that I hadn't maybe picked up on when I was younger. You've got some kind of like more straight up kind of like punk numbers. But then you've got like strings as well. And some quite touching moments amidst all the kind of like horror. Were there any songs that really stood out for you that you liked?
On those first eight?
Yeah.
Like Greatest Gift, I thought, as in the actual track, I quite liked. It sounded a bit like early Horrors, actually, in a sense of like that kind of surfer rock.
Yeah.
Sensibility. I thought it was quite interesting. And yeah, like Monsters, I quite liked as well. It's got some Monsters to me, like some of the guitar pits they do sounds a bit like what I would do, especially in early Pistol Gang stuff. And I think we kind of did it when we were doing Cells. Some of the guitar bits in that, I was like, that's something that I would probably, I know it sounds like I'm blowing my own trumpet. I don't mean it to, but I'm not necessarily saying it's great. I'm just saying it's kind of that similar kind of style sometimes I found myself doing. Like a bit messy, a bit manic sometimes. And also tonally, it sounded like my early Pistol Gang stuff. But yeah, and I've also put here that his vocals sound particularly like Pixies-esque. I'd about to say Jack Black then. Frank Black.
when style. He gets a scream going.
Yeah, and I can hear a bit of that. I know it's not, they would have been before Pixies, I suppose. But I was like, yeah, it sounds a bit Frank Black. Yeah, and then the rest of them, it's okay. Like El Espectro, whatever it's called.
El Espectro.
I was like, oh, it sounds like that Mexican kind of guitar sound reminded me of like Offspring, Ixnay on the Hombre.
Oh, man.
that kind of Mexican guitar. I always find that funny. Have you seen, by the way, going off on a tangent, I got thrown up on my Instagram thing, a World of Tanks, which is a game advert. And it had loads of random people. It had like the old goalkeeper from Spain or whatever in the last World Cup or whatever the fuck. And it had some metal band and it had Dolph Lundgren and it had Offspring. And Offspring apparently have a relationship with World of Tanks. Where they're like in the game or something like that. And they were basically saying like thank you to all the tankers, whatever they call them. Fucking stupid. But Dexter, have you seen Dexter recently?
No.
He's got so fat. I mean, he's old now, obviously, but I was like, yeah, he is big. He's a really? Big guy now. Yeah, it's worth
I'll have to check that out.
It's quite fun. It's probably why this came to me as well, because I had Offspring in my head just from that.
They contact him just to say, we need a human tank. We need a unit.
Unit. But they all look awful, but... yeah, you know, because I always think of Dexter's old Offspring with his like dreads or whatever, a skinny California guy, and now he's just like some. He looks like he's about to like go, I don't know, like mug someone, or he's about to tie a, you know, St. George's flag around his neck and start throwing beers at people.
a lager lout, like
a proper lager lout. But yeah, I've put like Owner's Lament and Lay Screaming. I found quite boring. Sorry,
that's the wrong answer. they're my favorite. Well, now Cannibal, Owner's Lament, and Lay Screaming are probably my three favorite songs here. Maybe my three favorites if their whole oeuvre. Owner's Lament.
Not like that sense. Yeah.
So Owner's Lament's the one that's got all the strings on. I just find it's quite haunting. And what's great here, another thing about Scratch Acid that you don't get with the Jesus Lizard. The Jesus Lizard, the drummer, Mac, is quite like, it's quite like a motor, his style of drumming. It's kind of like, wind it up, release. So it's quite bombastic. Ray Washam, though, who actually, at some point, just before they recorded this, got poached by Big Boys.
Right.
And did some work with them. So he returned and he was kind of like a bit more of like a, okay, he's a guy actually, you know, right. He's got some respect and kudos. But his style, I think, is a little bit more diverse. And like that is one of the songs where I think he really shows what he can do. It's quite, there's lots of like rolls and fills. And you just got this like really sad sound of the string arrangement, a bit of piano. David Yao, he's not so like blood curdly on this one. He's kind of just sounds like anguished. To me, yeah, that's like one that's a pervasive song, I think. Mm. So I'd recommend anyone to go back and give that a listen. Give it another go.
Give
it a chance.
Fair enough. I mean, it was, this is certainly all of these songs, I think you have to be paying attention to, if that makes sense. This is some background music.
Yeah, it's intense stuff. And I love some of the lyrics as well, like on some of these songs. There are some lines that just really stick out and the way he delivers them. Like Mess is all about basically someone who can't get their act together.
Mm.
And he's literally just like shouting and screaming. He's like, it stinks in my house. It stinks. Ella Spectro, there's this bit where he kind of like screams, like no sacrifice again.
Mm.
And then he's like, it's almost like someone who's broken. They've been told they've got to sacrifice something. So he like sings it. And then it's like, he comes to terms with it. And he just like, it's like the most primal scream of like, no sacrifice again. But it's a great like emotional moment, I think, in the song.
Mm.
His vocals are just amazing.
Sorry, didn't resonate quite the same way.
And then Lay Screaming to me is like, again, a bit of like a post-punk classic just for the horrible lyrics.
Go through the lyrics with me because I wasn't really paying attention to much of the actual lyrics.
Lay Screaming goes, the dead princess lay screaming and her cunt's ripped.
Well,
the dead princess lay silent and her cunt's ripped.
Right. there's not been much progress there for her.
It's basically, I mean, I can read you the whole lyrics here. I've got the booklet.
You're reading it from a book?
I've got the booklet for The Greatest Gift. Just got all the lyrics. Burn her, let's make her into a martyr because we split her breast. And she's disheartened, dismayed, disemboweled. Dead princess lay screaming and her cunt's ripped. So yeah, I mean, that's the kind of content that's running through a lot of these songs.
Yeah.
It's all just deeply unpleasant. And I love that.
I love that. Yeah, I was going to say, like, is there like a theme to his lyrics? Are they all just, you know, these horrific, disturbing kind of, you know, pictures?
Yeah, I think usually, yeah, they're these kind of montages of unpleasant and you know, often like deeply violent imagery. Although I'd say then on the next album, he experiments a bit more. So straight from the off, actually. So the next album, they had a bit of a break, and basically they said they progressed at a snail's pace in terms of songwriting. Right. So the next album wasn't until 2 years later, 1986, Just Keep Eating, which kicks off with, a song where I think it's a different kind of lyrical approach. And that song is Crazy Dan. Let's hear a bit. So Crazy Dan, I think he kind of like adopts a bit more of a narrative style. Mm-hmm. Actually tries to tell a story here about some crazy guy who commits some violent acts. So it's still in safe territory.
This is the inspiration for Dreadful Dan.
Yeah.
This is his brother, Crazy Dan. I quite liked this one. It was quite bluesy, I thought.
That song?
Yeah,
I agree.
And I was like, when I was listening to it, I was like, I wouldn't mind it being a bit more like this.
Mm.
And there's a couple of tracks which kind of, you know, as in the same vein. But yeah, I enjoyed this track more than a lot of the others. Basically, I quite like the bluesiness of it.
It's a bit more mid-tempo as well, isn't it? It's not quite as in your face, I think, that track.
Mm.
Generally, this album, Just Keep Eating, I think it's a bit different to the other ones because, as I said earlier, this one they recorded with a different guy, Fred Remmert.
Durst.
And they seem to have basically, spread a bit more. They try, I think, different types of song here.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a broader album. Like you say, there's a kind of like more of a bluesy vibe coming through. One song's got some harmonica as well, which is really nice.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's a bit different. It reminded me of, because we did King Gizzard recently.
Yeah.
About, there's a lot of harmonica in that. And I was like, I haven't heard so much harmonica in all my life. This lot.
Damned for All Time, we get a cover. Do you know what that's from?
No.
It's from Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen it or anything.
No, likewise. But when you check the lyric book, it's like Rice Lloyd Webber.
Right, yeah. God, how weird. Yeah, I've put Damned for All Time. I've just put a couple of words, meh, being one of them.
I like that one. I think that's good. Anything else? Anything that stood out on this one?
Yeah, I liked Big Bone Lick. Again, this kind of felt like one of my old jams or something as well. And I quite enjoyed that element of it. Unlike a Baptist, I quite liked the darkness of it. Mm. I mean, what track are we going up to? What would be, because I'm going by the compilation.
21.
Like an idiot. Okay, right. So Holes, I quite liked the noise intro. And Untitled One was just pure noise, and I quite enjoyed that aspect of it. But apart from the intro to Holes, I basically hated the rest of it. It sounded like a headache. It sounded like someone had put a headache into a song. Albino Slug, I liked.
What a different song, huh?
Yeah.
That's and it, that's Albino
more instrumental
Slug
as well.
Yeah, and I think it sounds really big to me. Suddenly, it's like big, epic, quite orchestrated track with piano and strings.
Yeah, and I like that about it. But yeah, definitely
something quite soothing about it.
Mm. Yeah, and then Spit a Kiss. Quite liked there's lots of reverb in there. I thought it was a bit David Lynch as well. And there's an industrial almost element to it. And the other one I liked was, well, that was kind of it. The rest I was like, meh. With some of it, like, what is it, Cheese Plug? I was quite bored by that point. I was like, meh. But yeah, those are kind of some of the ones anyway that I felt stood out. What about you? What favourites have you got?
Probably Albino Slug. This isn't my, so this is my least favourite of their three records. I think maybe because it's got that breadth and they're, you know, trying stuff out for a long player as opposed to the other two, which are just EPs. Mm. I think in a way it suffers because it kind of lacks maybe the intensity of the two EPs. And they sound like they're having a little bit more fun, and I don't like that. I don't want them to have fun. I want it to all be really dark and miserable and intense. But I quite like, the thing I like about that song, Holes. The lyrics are not by David Yao. Can't remember who wrote them. Yeah, there's a few songs actually where some of the like songwriting credits aren't what you expect. So like Cannibal, for example, words and music by David Yao.
Right.
Occasionally it's David Sims, the bassist, writing them. Sometimes it's the whole band. Sometimes it's the guitarist, Brett Bradford. But mostly the lyrics are David Yao, but sometimes someone else pops up. So Greatest Gift was by their original singer, Steve Anderson.
Right.
But anyway, the song that we're talking about, Holes, yeah. So the words there are by the guitarist, Brett Bradford.
Okay.
And it just makes me laugh because he goes, I popped out of a hole and was.
It's quite deep in its own way.
Yeah. And those two untitled songs on the CD, they're basically uncredited tracks that end each side of the original vinyl.
Right.
So they're kind of like little secret instrumental jams, I suppose. They probably had them lying around from the session, thought, let's just use them. But there's some of the best music on the album.
Wow, it's doing them a disservice. I didn't actually mind it that much, just because I generally like noise, like experimental kind of noise and abstract noise stuff. And this is quite dark. I probably liked, if I'm going to be honest, I probably liked Untitled 1 over Untitled 2.
Yeah.
But I'm just take a pick.
I think they're good. Yeah. They're interesting.
Why do you think they're the best?
I just think they're kind of like musically, they're a little bit more interesting than some of the other songs. And they've got like their own vibe, again, with like Albino Slug. These instrumentals that they do, they seem kind of sometimes more proficient than the other songs. Even though obviously like the main draw for me for this band is probably David Yao.
Yeah.
It felt like, there's more depth to their songwriting than maybe they allowed themselves to explore, and those songs kind of show that potential.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't then pursue that with their next release. So they got on quite quickly at this point. So they were having some problems at this point because their first two records were released by a little like Austin, I think, record label called Rabid Cat, right. And they didn't have a contract with them because they said like the terms of the contract were ridiculous. They could choose to withhold royalties if they wanted to, blah, blah, blah. But at this point, they were talking to a record label called Touch and Go in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd said, that's a terrible contract. Like, here's an example of our standard contract that we use for bands. And apparently they took it to Rabid Cat and they said, no, it's ridiculous. You'll never get a deal like that. You guys think you're the Butthole Surfers and you haven't paid your dues.
Right.
So at that point, they just turned around and said, Touch and Go, do you want to do it? And they're like, yeah. So that opened up a little bit of potential because by being signed to Touch and Go, They were able to then get like a UK deal as well.
Right.
So 1987, yeah, their final EP, Berserker, was released in the US on Touch and Go. And in the UK, all their stuff came out on the Fundamental label. Another right. record label that they say never paid them a damn cent. So they never had any money, they reckon, from Rapid Cat or Fundamental.
Awful.
Yeah.
Awful if true.
But that saw them kind of like coming to Europe as well and playing and mm-hmm. doing some shows. But anyway, Berserker, like I said, they went back to working with Kerry Crafton here. Mm-hmm. And I think they kind of, return a bit more to focusing on the sound of the first EP. Although this is like noticeably, I think, like sonically, there's a shift. It's a lot clearer.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more professional sounding. Personally, I don't think it's got, I think the songs are as good as the first EP.
No.
But it's still got a few really killer moments.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, what did you think of it? So this is tracks 22 to 27.
So overall, these tracks I thought were the worst of the lot. So I kind of agree that I don't think it's as engaging, basically, as the rest of the stuff. Mary Had a Little Drug Problem, I enjoyed. Uh-huh. I had some good riffs. And For Crying Out Loud, I quite liked as well. And that was a bit more desperate. And I quite liked some of the, kind of primal screams and all this stuff. But the rest, I like Moron's Moron. I found quite boring. I found some of it quite lazy. Skin Drips, I found quite lazy. Flying Houses, I thought was okay. It's weird having that stop and then coming back in. And I was it's interesting, but I feel like you're not doing anything with it, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know. It didn't
land for you.
No, I was just like, oh, it stopped. And now it started again. Not like, oh, it's like building up a pressure. I don't know. Like, it didn't feel like it was building up or like, it was like delaying anything. It was just like as if someone's just stopped the record and then pressed play again. And I was like, okay, well, unless you're trying to get all like meta about it, I was like, it's like a songwriting tool. I was like, it's just doing it for the sake of doing it, isn't it then? I don't know. And also by this point, I was getting a bit sick of the drumming, like just the constant like drum rolls and like, feels like everything's on the snare almost. And it's just, let me do, it's, I didn't mind it kind of before, but when it's like, okay, drum roll here, drum roll here, and I'm going to do this, and then whatever, doing all this. I'm just like, just fucking play, just play some music. Like, what are you doing? I was kind of, I think having kind of like, let's say the worst of it, at the back end of this record, it was kind of testing my patience by the time I was getting to the last track.
That's a shame.
What did you think?
It's worth listening to these as standalones. That's always the problem with compilations like this, that just cram a whole discography onto one thing.
Mm.
Like I said, though, it is not my favourite. I do love Moron's Moron, though. That would be one of my favourites of theirs. It was actually my my email address back sometime around the turn of the new millennium.
Password David Yao.
It's just so, it's like nightmare fuel, this song. If you sit and listen to the lyrics and everything, it's vile. And the whole, like, it's slow and weird. And it really does feel like crawling on your belly through some, like, dank, dark slime. And I mean, the lyrics don't really make any sense, but it's just the images you're being presented with are really disgusting. Again, let me turn to my lyric book.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So he seems to have a problem with somebody, and he's labeling them a moron's moron.
Right.
But it's just weird. Like, he's saying, like, you wade through water, you hurl stones, heave in heavy rocks all the time, you start fires, burn up everything you can find, you're one cranky bastard, and I hate your guts. Fucking babies in their butts. Who do you get to tie your shoes for you anyway? You cut holes in your flesh, fill the holes with venom, drag your bitches around after cramming fucking them.
Well.
I love that bit where he's going, cramming fucking them. Because there's that obvious sonic play on the words there. And then he starts going on about, like, you hang a gloomy trio from gallows. You cut holes in your flesh again. Fill the holes with venom. Drag your bitches around. And then it just ends with saying, you'll find your shoes on the patio with the sour milk. It just sounds like maybe he's had like an argument with his flatmate or something. And he's just like written this really angry song about it. Really weird, abstract imagery. And then it's just like, yeah, you'll find your shoes on the porch, mate.
Make your own way out.
It's our way of telling you you're out. Apparently, the way they got rid of the lead singer, Steve Anderson, was they just played a gig, like their first gig, and as just like instrumentals, while he was like, he'd come to the show because I think it was like Butthole Surface or something. They're the support band,
right?
So he's just like, oh, they've gone on stage and played without me, without a singer.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
What a horrible way of doing it. There's people such dicks sometimes. Like, when they don't have the fucking balls to like stand up and just tell someone they're fucking out.
Dear.
Bastards.
Oh, well. I like it. I love it. So 1987, after the release of that, they did quite a lot of touring, more touring, I think, than they'd done before, taking them to Europe. And I don't really know what happens. I mean, there's the liner notes to this CD, are basically probably the most information that's out there. Right. And they're written by a guy called Mike Hunt, which sounds to me like an obvious pseudonym for one of the band members. I'd assume David Sims. Because he's quite into like being a kind of like spokesperson and archivist for his music. Okay. Yeah, but he just said, like, spending too much time in each other's company, personal and musical tensions escalated and everybody ceased having fun. Scratch Acid played its last show on the 5th of May, 1987 at the Cave Club in Austin. So that was it for the band, 1987. And then it wasn't until, 1991, Touch and Go released this CD, The Greatest Gift.
Mm-hmm.
There is a bonus track. And quite humorously, the back of the CD states all songs previously unreleased, except 1 to 27. So track 28 is the scale song, which is actually, yeah, if you go online, you can find this leaked demo that they recorded, which is Cannibal, but with completely different lyrics and obviously being sung by Steve Anderson.
Yeah,
I think there's two versions of Lay Screaming and this one, the scale song. But what they've done is they've stripped his vocals off of this for the released version.
Right.
Thank God. Because I really like this song, the scale song. It's just, yeah, instrumental. But I don't know, I just find that like a really catchy, kind of hooky little jam.
Yeah, I'm trying to, I don't remember. I've written it down, but I haven't put anything underneath it.
That's all right. It's innocuous.
I was going to say, it's like, it's just kind of a lot more experimental, noisy, right? It doesn't, it's not much, it's kind of more of a abstract.
It's just a groovy little
soundscape.
Jam.
Yeah. So say it again. So they've taken taken the vocals off.
Yeah, so this is from their first demo from back in late 1982.
Right.
Which, yeah, was comprised of Cannibal, two versions of Lay Screaming and Scale Song, right. all of which with Steve Anderson singing.
Right.
So I guess they were like looking to kind of like put everything out, the band's whole catalogue. So maybe they were like, well, we've got this song that we never released, but can you take his vocals off? Which put it out as an instrumental.
We don't want to give him any money.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But so that's it, the scale song. So, but they only have to put this out on CD. So the time is right now. Please touch and go. Everyone wants vinyl. You know.
Said no one.
<they're> so this should be reissued, man. Because their original albums are really hard to get hold of, like I said. Like, they're usually quite a lot of money. So, The Greatest Gift, come on, we want it.
Gift from Touch and Go would be The Greatest Gift for you on vinyl.
Oh, yeah. Except I think the window of opportunity was kind of like closed. Because they could have done it during the reunion. But they chose not to. So yeah, they did reunite a long time afterwards. Obviously, just in 1987, after Scratch Acid broke up, two of them, David Sims and Ray Washam, so the bassist and the drummer, joined forces with Steve Albini, who just wrapped up Big Black, and they formed Rape Man.
Okay. What a superhero.
The super group, Noise Rock super group, not one of my favourites, to be honest. I've always preferred all the other related bands, Shellac and Big Black and the Jesus Lizard.
He's my worst Avenger.
Yeah. Is he in that programme that you've been watching? Naughty Boys.
Oh, yeah, actually, to be honest, yeah. There's a couple I think would make that. Be able to fill that space, yeah.
But Rape Man didn't last very long. And in 1989...
Sorry. yes.
1989, the Jesus Lizard performed.
Yeah.
You know, comprised of David Sims, David Yao, and Dwayne Dennison. And I think people, you know, people see Scratch Acid as like a stepping stone to the Jesus Lizard. You know, like they're like... a footnote in the career of the Jesus Lizard, basically. But I very much consider them like their own separate entity, their own thing, and quite different in many ways. Like I said, there's kind of more of that.
More overall, of that, it feels like.
Definitely, yeah. And there's more of that diversity of, I think, styles, moods. But just that like pervasive kind of oppressive, dark, dank, nasty vibe. Everything feels like you're kind of like listening to it through brackish water.
Yeah. I can totally share that. Totally hear that.
In September of 2006, they reformed to do, basically to do three shows in support of Touch and Go's 25th anniversary celebrations.
Right.
So they just did three shows, one in Austin, one in Chicago, one in Seattle. And then randomly, I don't know why, but 5 years after that, they got together and they did a proper tour. And so this is like November, December 2011. And they played about 14 shows in the USA and Canada. And then finally, the following spring, in March of 2012, they came over to the UK to play the All Tomorrow's Parties Festival.
Right.
And they tacked on one gig. So on the 12th of March, 2012, they played their final ever gig, and it was at the Garage in London. I'm proud to say I was there.
Oh, wow.
And it was fantastic. They played all the songs that I wanted them to play. And David Yao kicked me in the eye.
What? Did he recognize you?
I don't think it was intentional. If you, you know what he's like as a performer. Have you seen him doing his
violent
his thing?
No.
You never seen him. Oh my god. You've got to see what he's just the most like vile looking person.
Right.
And everything about his like onstage act and demeanor, it just comes across as like, you know, the thing about it doesn't come across as an act. He seems like a genuinely horrible, deranged person. But he flings himself around in the crowd all the time.
Yeah. I'm gonna have a look at him whilst you're God, I keep forgetting he's just like looks like a normal bloke. He's totally like just some guy. Like he works and he's a builder in his spare time.
That's it. You can imagine it's like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He just looks like a steel worker or an abattoir worker or something. He's gone completely deranged.
Yeah. I remember now, I have seen him. We had exactly the same conversation, didn't we? Yeah, sorry. I'm going to take a look at this as well. Put this in my, see some of his performances.
Oh, yeah, there's some great stuff on YouTube now. Great stuff. Yeah, so that was their last ever gig, and they haven't played again since then. So that's pretty lucky, really. They came over and played that show.
Yeah, I bet you were well chuffed.
I was so pleased, Yeah, and it was the all four guys. Like I said, they did everything. I hope they play.
Yeah,
brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and that is. That is it. That is the end, I think. I can't see them reforming and doing any more of those. But that was the window of opportunity for Touch and Go to put some vinyl out there, and they did not choose to do it. Bad.
Idiots. Never mind. So Dan, who is like, who would you say like today sounds like Scratch Acid, or maybe like has that influence clear on their sleeve?
Christ.
Benny.
I really don't know. I don't know these days. I mean, I suppose you can chart a line kind of through the kind of noise rock sound, you know, like Chicago music scene and Minneapolis music scene, like the Amphetamine Reptile bands, you know, like Helmet and who else? Killdozer, Unsane is still going, but they lean a bit more heavily on the kind of like post-hardcore punk sound. But then it feels like those kind of bands, you know, they're active in the, they're more than like in the early 90s. It does feel to me like there's like a newer wave of bands that were either in those bands and are now like old, like really old, or bands that they've influenced that are pushing this kind of like newer wave of noise rock.
Right.
But they're introducing more sounds. So it's kind of like more eclectic and a bit more weird and experimental.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm thinking about this guy that I've been listening to, Harry Cloud. Mm. Who else? Hepatitis, you know, that other band that I really like.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, there really isn't. I mean, if you like Scratch Acid, probably the best, well, the obvious band to listen to is the Jesus Lizard. Yeah. But obviously also the Birthday Party. Right. People often say like Scratch Acid was kind of like an American Birthday Party.
Right.
Yeah, if you like that unhinged fury.
One band which I started listening to through Idols basically was Heavy Lungs. And it kind of reminds me a bit of them.
I don't know them.
Well, the singer is a guy called Danny Nedelko. And the reason why I know his name is that that's an Idol song. and it's about like, it's like an anti-Brexit kind of song. It's about, you know, pro-immigration and all this. Because, yeah, Danny Nedelko, the singer of Heavy Lungs, I don't know about the rest of the band, but yeah, he's from, I want to say Lithuania, but I think I might have that completely wrong, but he's not from England, basically. So, and I don't know, it kind of sounded similar because he's got that same, it's like a manicness to it. It also sounds a little bit, it's not quite David Jowell, but I don't know. I think there's a bit of a influence there at least.
That's funny. I'm just looking at them and they're from Bristol. And I was just thinking another band that sound kind of similar to what you've just described is Lyce.
Right, I don't know Lyce.
And their lead singer's a bit like that. It's not quite that as extreme. He was a little bit Marky Smith like and a little bit David Yao like in this kind of like tirade that he delivered, but they looked really normal. But I saw them playing in a pub and I was meant to see them again. That was a few years ago. I was meant to see them just when lockdown began.
Mm.
And we were like, surely it's not going to be cancelled. And like some of my friends were like, well, you might want to check. It's probably going to get cancelled. And I was like, no, it doesn't make sense. That doesn't happen. So, yeah, got cancelled.
I'm not surprised.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, check out Heavy Lungs. I think you'd like it anyway. It's definitely more up your street than mine, maybe. Because I think it's all right, some of it. But I'm just like, yeah, I'd rather listen to something else. But, yeah, you might like Heavy Lungs. Cool.
They look like upstanding young gentlemen.
Yeah, well, they are. Should we do what about Nerd Corner?
Let's go there. Not much in Nerd Corner because basically they didn't release that much.
Fucking nicked it. They've taken all my nerds. Do you remember the Sweet Nerds? Remember those? They still do them.
Willy Wonka makes them, doesn't he?
Sherbet stuff.
Yeah. Pretty tangy, kind of sour.
Yeah.
I hope they do.
What's in it? What's a Scratch Acid nerd look like?
Probably looks about 55 years old.
Yeah.
Probably like really skinny from having done too much meth in the late 80s. Bald and probably single.
Yeah.
Probably it's probably the guy who sold me those records.
It would be, wouldn't it?
Nerd Corner. So yeah, I mean there aren't like all these exciting alternative editions of their stuff because it got released at the time and it's never been reissued. Their album though, Just Keep Eating. There's a standard version's got a little picture of a baby on the front.
Right.
But there's like the special one, which I think was only in the UK. Can't remember. And it's just got this like mirrored effect on the front.
Right.
So basically you see like a weird distorted picture of your ugly face.
Okay. Well, my face is ugly, but okay.
One thing we didn't talk about is the artwork.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of the artwork.
Have a quick look now.
What should I Google for? Scratch Acid artwork. I can't do that.
Yeah, Scratch Acid, 1984. Because again, like, okay. You know, I was saying, like, that album that they did, you know, with a different producer, and it's got this like more broader experimental sound. It's also got like very different artwork, whereas the EPs a very cohesive look, because they worked with this artist. What's his name? Forgotten.
It is quite cool. I'm just looking at it. It's quite
Mark Todd. His name was
horrible. Some of them, and yeah, Berserker looks really abstract.
Yeah, they're these kind of like elongated black and white figures, human figures.
I like that.
Whereas the album's just got this like comical picture of a baby.
Right.
But I think that imagery, yeah, to me, it really contributes to the sound. It really reflects it. And again, they got him to do the artwork for the Greatest Gift CD. Right. And I'm pretty sure as well, it must have been him that did the first Jesus Lizard album, because they look really similar. He's horrible. Like, the Greatest Gift's got this like sort of, might be a female figure holding her vulva.
Right.
Yeah. Just something a little bit distasteful about the whole thing, a little bit unnerving.
Mm. Well, can't go wrong with that, can you?
The only real rarity, you know, like I said, this CD dusts up pretty much everything except for this demo that leaked. So, you know, if you're really into the band and you want to hear what they sounded like before David Yao started singing, give that a listen. They sound really, just really generic, I think. This guy doing his like punk singing. Da, 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 da.
Right. I just from that, I know exactly what you're talking about. that's a classic, like when you go see a punk band that's been around for like a million years. So that's the kind of thing I'm thinking of. Like, who's just coming pubs around the outskirts of London.
Just kind of yelling in a snotty voice along to the exact like rhythm and melody of the guitar.
Yeah. Fair enough. Cool.
Reviews?
Yeah, reviews. Well, it's your turn, isn't it? Do a voice. Well, I'll give my, because what did I do last? Oh, I did Steven Spielberg, didn't I? Oh, Jesus. So, for my final review, generally speaking, I found this a tough listen. I can see why you like it. Specifically you as well. But there's some bits in there which I find quite interesting. And I think if I'm looking for something that's a bit more experimental, and that's a bit different. And I think it's something that inspires me to kind of watch more of the live stuff, actually, when I think about it. Because when I was listening to it, I was like, I feel like this stuff would work quite well live, that kind of mania and frenzy. I imagine is quite... you know, resonates really well with the live audience. But sitting down listening to a record, it was a bit tough. I would, it's not that I hate it or anything like that. I just do find it quite a tough listen, and I just ain't got time for that in my life anymore. But there are a couple of tracks which I, you know, would probably return to, or just keep at hand to like listen to. But I can get it. I understand it. I don't think it's particularly for me, but yeah, I can see why you and many others do like it. And maybe it's a case of it'll grow on me after a while, because it's not just so easily accessible at first listen. So yeah, like with all these things, I never write it off immediately. And some of my favorite bands are ones that I started off not liking in the first place. So yeah, who knows?
It's like an aggressive mold.
Hmm. You mean like a body thing, or like an actual animal?
You.
Oh, okay. I'm just imagining an animal standing outside my house, like
aggressive mold.
Oh, right. I think it's a mole. Chill out. Okay, Dan. Okay, let's do your final review, and let's keep it simple.
Impression. Final impression.
Final impression. Sorry. And let's see if you could do it in the style of David Yao. You don't have to do it at a volume, but can you do it in that same frenzied manic voice that he's so great at doing? And this sounds exactly like you're singing on Pelican Daughters, I reckon, as well. That was probably a purposeful move, I imagine, when you were doing it. But I was listening going like, ah, this is kind of like you're singing on Pelican Daughters. Would I be correct in assuming that?
I think David Yao, was a heavy influence.
Yeah.
On me.
Well, then this would be really fucking easy for you then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, except I'm up in my parents' spare room. 10:15 at night.
Yeah, true. Okay. Well, give it, you don't have to go crazy.
You cranky bastard. This is the best post-punk rock you'll hear ever.
Say it.
So,
what did you have for breakfast this morning, David Yao?
Slime.
I don't even know who that sounds. Does it sound like him?
Slime.
Yeah, the best vocal that David Yao ever did was a song called Pop Song by the Jesus Lizard, which isn't on any of their albums. He makes the most horrible sound I've ever heard in the middle of this song. It's just like, it's so weird. He just kind of goes, for about 45 seconds. It's just like, why would you even do that? It works because it's just so
like, impression on you.
Shocking and unexpected and just vile.
Lovely, right? Right, should we go to actual reviews? Have you got reviews for this?
Yeah, I've got a few.
Let's do it.
I hate it.
It's quite hard to find reviews. I thought there might be some contemporary reviews that have made their way online, but there isn't. There's not much online about this band at all. I went on Amazon and I looked up The Greatest Gift. So I've got a few here.
Mm.
So JF14112 gave it 5 stars.
Mm.
If you like scratch acid, this album is for you.
Precise, yes.
True. Can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Brandon S. Whitehead gave a 5-star review. Wow. Scratch Acid is one of those bands that really don't fit into any real style of music. The songs here are violent, noisy, and quite wild, and the bizarre screams and yowls of Divid Yow are so crazy and absurdly performed that it's very hard to understand them unless on certain mind-expanding substances. Substances the band was very into. I hate it when people say that. I'm not on certain mind-expanding substances. Yeah, just because something's a little bit out there, it doesn't mean that everyone was on drugs and that everyone listens to it on drugs.
Yeah. Probably helps, though. With this. Sorry, go on. It's not an endorsement.
Apparently, there's a rumour, which could be just made up by the band, but that they used to distribute hits of acid at their gigs.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Musically, the only thing to compare this to is Yao's later band, the more popular Jesus Lizard. Yet somehow that band never captured the nightmarish, surreal insanity that Scratch Acid does.
Mm.
The music here is also much tighter and organised. The drum and bass really play perfectly together and create original intros for great songs like She Said and Amicus. Everyone in this band played so amazing well with one another. It's sad we don't have more music from this band.
It is sad. It's sad very big.
Brandon do big sad. In short, many bands try to sound disturbing and violent, but very few succeed. Scratch Acid is one of the bands that did. Mm. If that's what you're into, this band will not disappoint. I think that's quite accurate.
Yeah, I think it's accurate as well. Yeah, fair enough. Any
I've got
ones?
One star. Yeah, yep. I'm afraid so. Michael S. Marley. Now, Michael S. Marley, he seems to consider himself... He could be. He seems to consider himself some kind of like Chicago music scene insider.
Right.
Because he addresses this directly to Corey Rusk, the head of Touch and Go Records.
Right.
One star.
All right.
The subject of his review is, and has dead spots and sounds like crap halfway through.
Mm.
Thanks, Corey. Kidding. I'm now on my fourth copy of this CD. It's not the band's fault. It's yours. The labels. Touch and Go. Mm. You knew about the manufacturing defect from the get-go. I called you. But yet you did nothing.
You knew. You knew.
I'm sick of buying these, hoping for that magical copy that doesn't have the defects and cuts out halfway during the recording. Well, guess again. Everyone I've had my hands on cuts out and has dead spots and sounds like crap halfway through. WTF? Don't believe me? Read the reviews and give me your address again and I'll mail you one of the damn things. One can only enjoy the first half, if that. Thanks, dumbass. Otherwise a great band. Sad a half-ass label handled its release. Even Curtis from Tang wouldn't have messed this one up.
Curtis. That Curtis. And this is on Amazon. So he's bought it through Amazon, thinking that someone from Touch and Go is reading the Amazon reviews.
I guess so. Although he does say, I called you. He did call him.
Hello, so, Amazon customer care. I want to speak to Corey. sorry, sir.
I don't get it because no one else is saying anything about there being any problems, and you know, there's no issues with my CD. It's
a conspiracy.
I mean, he reckons he's bought four copies of the CD that don't work.
Why wouldn't you just return them? Especially from Amazon, just send them back in and get another one if that's what you want to do.
What are the chances?
Four copies. Because there's probably Amazon only has one and just keep sending him the same one, keep sending it back.
He's probably got a broken CD player.
Yeah. Well, weird, strange review. Bloody hell. Well, that was interesting. Dan, any kind of like, any final Scratch Acid thoughts?
I just wish there was some good live stuff. You know, like you said, you'd probably enjoy the live experience. But I don't think any of their like shows from their original run were professionally recorded. I've got some bootlegs and they're really rough. Obviously from the reunion, there's stuff out there. But most of that seems to be like shot from the audience. And, you know, it's not the same, obviously, seeing these frankly old dudes. Although, you know, they're still bloody brilliant and David Yao always still puts on a show. In a way, he's more terrifying as an older man because he really seems like, you know, a grizzled old guy that would just like be in a bar.
Fuck anymore. Yeah,
like beat you with a cue ball just for looking at him wrong.
Yeah, and we've seen a few of those, haven't we?
Yeah. What was that guy said to you?
I can't remember.
In the Beehive?
In East London, yeah, Beehive one.
Sam got in trouble because we didn't sound enough like The Who for his liking. Play some fucking like, Who.
Yeah, he was basically complaining because he couldn't hear what I was singing, as in he couldn't hear the lyrics. Bear in mind, I've only really got lyrics about half the songs playing anyway, and that half I don't remember in the first place. But yeah, he was getting, he said something like, he was basically like going to knife me is what it was kind of ending up as. Yeah. He was doing it in a roundabout way, saying I was in the toilets having a piss and he came in and it started getting a bit like testy, and I was able to just kind of like brush it off and walk out. He's basically saying he's got someone out there ready to kill someone for someone who disrespected him or something like that. And he was basically insinuating that that person was me. And then, but yeah.
How did you disrespect him?
By just playing the gig? I don't know. It was, but he was like just so up for a fight. Yeah. It actually ended up fine. But if you remember, like, there was that point where I was just like, I need to get out of here, like now. Because I don't want any more alcohol and time to fuel this fire that's kind of going on. So it was all fine. But yeah, I think that was the moment, I think I told you afterwards, where I was just like, fuck this. Like, fuck these fucking gigs in like places like here. Yeah, usually it's kind of like fine. But yeah, we were next to like a proper, like, you know, scummy pub that was listening and watching the football and all this stuff. And we were just in a side room with about like 10 people there to actually watch the music.
Yeah, it's all right, but you should play a bit more like The Who.
Yeah, exactly. All that
part. Just listen to some Led Zeppelin. Sing the words a bit more better as I can hear them.
Yeah, all that stuff. And you remember, like, I kept getting, I mean, this always happens to me anyway, I kept getting proper electric shocks as well. Yeah. My lip just kept exploding, just through getting shocked. And it was like, you can die from it.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll be fine. I'll be fine. Just, you know, let's just play it. Let's just do it. Like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Nothing.
And people say, punk stares and everything. Stop just watching the highlights of Glastonbury on TV. And you come down to rough old pubs like that and you'll see front men bleeding on stage for their craft.
Well, don't go to that pub. Fuck. I'll never recommend that pub for anything. So horrible. As soon as I walked in, someone tried to sell me tickets to Chelsea that weekend. I was like, what? Literally, I'd only just walked in. I only opened the door. I was like, there we go. So let's get on to what we're doing next week, Dan.
Okay.
It was music this week, so we're going to be doing a game next week's episode. So let's go to the random generator and see what we're going to get. You ready?
Uh-huh. Ever ready.
Oh, my God. It's music related, and I'm actually quite looking forward to this.
Hang on. Music-related computer game.
Oh my God, yeah, Dan, it's going to blow your mind.
Is it Mario Music?
No. And it's not Rock Band or anything like that. It is Rez. Have you heard of Rez?
No.
Oh, mate. Oh, it's lovely. It was, for people who don't know, it's first released on PS2. Got a recent release on PS4 in a VR form as well, which is pretty cool. And essentially, you are traveling through this weird, like, computer universe, and you are attacking things flying around you, but it's all done to music. Mm-hmm. And it's great. It's really good. It's one of my favorites, and it is a little odd, just because it's an oddity in the sense that as a game, as a play style, and just of its time. This is when, like, you would get these like weird little gems from Japan that kind of came and went. And the guy who designed this, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. He went on to do some other stuff. Child of Eden was one which I actually really liked as well. This was, a lot of people talk about this game as being like an inspiration and something that, you know, when it's like games as art and all that stuff, that argument. This sometimes, especially back then, this got brought up a lot in terms of that. So it's a good one. And it's a, you know, I think it's a relatively short game as well. It's quite easy to kind of sit through a walkthrough if you want to do it that way. I've got it, so I'll bust it out and give it another play. And And yeah, I think that's a good choice for next week. And yeah, it's a bit music related, so who knows? Hope you like EDM.
Yeah.
That way. it is like electronic, but the actual music itself, I think, is actually pretty good.
Maybe I'll give that a listen. Mm. As my prep.
Yeah, do it. Cool. So that's it, guys. Thanks for listening. I guess we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for joining us on the Oddcast, guys. We're part of a New Winter group, so head on over to newwinter.com to check out our other shows. Go to patreon.com/newwinter to support the network. You can email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com and follow this and our other shows on Twitter and Instagram @anewwinter. So, see you next time on the Oddcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.